Hello, everyone. This is the New Rules podcast, and I'm your host, Dmitry Symes Jr. The surprise arrest of Telegram CEO Pavel Durov has captured global headlines this week. This is obviously a fast-developing story, but I think it's a good opportunity to have a broader conversation about the intersection between geopolitics and technology. And to help us break down this issue, we're very pleased to welcome a longtime friend of the program, Pepe Escobar. Pepe, welcome back to the show.
Enormous pleasure to be with you, Dmitry.
So let me start with the most obvious question. What, you know, there's been a lot of debate about the potential motivation of the French government for going after Pavel Durov. You know, as someone who lives in France, who knows its politics well, what do you think is the most logical explanation?
There are several intertwined explanations in terms of internal French politics, but most of all, the European Commission overall policy. The European Commission's overall policy is basically the Digital Services Act, which many of you in the audience would know. It's a new Orwellian law, basically organized by those thousands of bureaucrats of the European Commission in Brussels to regulate social networks. But the key target is the big Silicon Valley networks, not necessarily Telegram. Because Telegram, they don't have more than 45 million active users a month in Europe, according to their own numbers. The French say no, they're lying. But these are the official Telegram numbers. And the Digital Services Act basically wants to regulate the big guys, Meta, X, etc. The French rationale is slightly different compared to the European Commission rationale. We all know that there is no social network in Europe, which proves to all of us, especially around the global majority, that the so-called technological power of the EU is a myth. They're desperate about it. So what do they do? Instead of create, they regulate, which is the point of the Digital Services Act. Or, to be slightly bolder, in the case of Telegram, which is much smaller compared to Silicon Valley, there's the possibility of why not take it over? Why not steal it? Or why not dismember it? You know. So these are three possibilities. In terms of why not take it over and why not try to get total control, in Europe, Telegram basically is the number one source for what's really happening in the proxy war between the U.S. and the collective West and Russia in Ukraine. Of course, it doesn't compare to the massive audience of Silicon Valley, but everyone, including people in French government and people in different European capitals, they are tuned to Telegram. They follow Telegram.
So it's a high-value audience.
It's a high-value audience. It's not a question of numbers, right? Add to it the fact, this is a proven fact in West Asia and across the Sahel. All these liberation movements against French neocolonialism in the Sahel, the means of communication is Telegram. So from the point of view of the French bureaucratic elite, which is a Kafkaesque compound, you know, they went to the same schools, they have the same education, they go to the same ministers, they go to the same clubs, you name it. It's a class. And these are the people who actually rule France. And France is a pyramid. It's extremely centralized. Everything from Le Petit Roi, the little king upstairs, and then the bureaucracy, they control everything. And the fact that they do not control Telegram for them is anathema. It simply cannot happen. So we were just waiting for an excuse. So we learned a few days ago, in fact, that the so-called investigation of Telegram did not start in the beginning of July. It actually started way back in March. But nobody knew about it. This was totally secret. And this brings us to the element of secrecy in France. Everything in France is secret. The bureaucracy is stultifying, in one sense. And at the same time, public opinion, the average citizen to know what the bureaucracy is doing is absolutely impossible because of this secrecy. You know, the information only circulates among themselves. So the strong possibility that this was a mix of let's try to come up with a way to try to interfere with Telegram or control it, or if they don't cooperate, we ban it. Who cares? Europeans won't care if Telegram is banned because they will go to a VPN and start using Telegram anywhere. And Telegram is not a social network that is focused on the global north. It's focused on the global south. So, you know, the social network of choice for the global majority is Telegram. The BRICS across the West Asia, former Middle East, Central Asia, Southeast Asia, everybody goes to Telegram. So this is just the beginning, Dimitri.
Yeah. So, I mean, you gave a very rigorous breakdown. I just want to condense it, focus on the three points that you mentioned so that our audience members can really hammer it home.
Okay.
So from what I'm hearing from you is that there's three vectors driving this.
Yes.
There's the economic vector. Europeans cannot compete, so they try to regulate and seize. There's a geopolitical aspect that they see that Telegram is a source of alternative news. And in the age of information warfare, platforms are a source of power. And then third is the fact that French bureaucrats are just control freaks. And the fact that, you know, some sort of platform doesn't want to abide by their every whim just drives them insane.
Absolutely correct. That's it.
So I want to focus on the economic aspect, because I think that amid the debates about free speech, this has kind of fallen to the background. I get the logic that you describe, but it seems to me that from the Europeans' own perspective, this is counterproductive and yet another self-inflicted wound.
Yes.
Because we already see that the Europeans are deindustrializing due to decades of stupid neoliberal policies and years of counterproductive sanctions against Russia. Now they decided, hey, let's add to that deindustrialization by scaring off all the potential tech investors by going after one of the most visible app developers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the game plan here? Is there any sort of method to this madness?
In fact, no. if we think about Descartes, there is no method at all. And that's where the personal psychopathology of Emmanuel Macron steps in. Very, very, there is a personal element in this whole story, which is extremely toxic. Le Canard Enchaîné, which is the number one investigative weekly newspaper in France. It's very, very funny. Usually, the front page is usually a cartoonish story, but the substance is very, very serious because they have the best informers anywhere. And the informers are from the police and from the security services, essentially. So usually when they have a scoop, it's very, very serious. So what did they have early this week? They published that the guy who actually arrested Durov at the airport, Durov said, look, I'm here to have dinner with the president. How come? If this is really true, and Durov had no reason to lie, this proves that this was really a trap. And a trap that didn't start only a few days ago, a trap that started a few years ago. So we have to go back to 2018. What happened in 2018? Durov met Macron in Paris. And Macron directly said, why don't you transfer Telegram to France? At the time, as you remember, Durov was already in Dubai, and Telegram's headquarters was already in Dubai. He had already left Russia. Durov said, no, I'm okay with my Dubai setup. He was already a UAE citizen by the time as well. But then they start discussing about French citizenship. And Macron offered French citizenship to Durov. We don't know the terms because this is France. Everything is secret. We know the facts. Durov got his French passport 3 years later, 2021. So he became a French citizen in 2021 because of Emmanuel Macron. Well, so what happens after that? There was a sort of lull, right? And he was not coming here, he was not coming back to France quite often. When he was during his tour of Central Asia and the Caucasus, and they crossed paths with Vladimir Putin in Baku and all that, after that, the next destination would be Paris because of this so-called dinner with Emmanuel Macron. And this ties up with the information that is confirmed that there was no arrest warrant against Durov before he boarded his Embraer flight from Baku to come to Paris. This happened while the plane was in full flight. They issued a warrant when the plane was already flying into France. So when everybody knows that when you are on a private plane, your pilot has to file the flight plans in advance to where he's going. So obviously, if there was an arrest warrant, the pilot would have known. No, there was nothing. So you have an instant arrest warrant a few hours before the plane lands, and that's why he's arrested at the airport. So the whole thing, obviously, Macron said no. This is all, I hear, in fact, he did a post on X. Macron himself said, no, I hear a lot of stories about it. Everything is not true, etc., etc. You cannot trust Macron. He lies all the time. Everybody knows that. French politicians know that. The fact that he hasn't appointed a prime minister yet is because he's lying all the time. So anything that the president of France says, you cannot trust. So we have this scenario in front of us that the president of France set up a trap against Pavel Durov.
Yeah, you briefly mentioned that he hasn't appointed a prime minister yet. I just want to give a small factual aside for our viewers who may not be following French politics as closely. On July 7th, there were the French legislative elections. And everyone ahead of time said that Macron was putting on a very big gamble by holding them so early because they were scheduled, I think, to happen next year.
Next year,
but exactly. He decided to hold them early ahead of the Paris Olympics. So he holds these elections and he loses them quite significantly. One third of the vote goes to Macron's party. One third goes to Le Pen's party. And one third goes to a coalition of leftist parties. Mm-hmm. But, you know, given the specifics of the French political system, the party that captures the most seats is this leftist coalition. So in theory, Macron afterwards would have had to go to this leftist coalition, form a coalition government, and appoints a prime minister from that coalition. But first, Macron says that, hey, you know, let's wait till the Paris Olympics are over. We need stability and continuity. Paris Olympics pass, and he's come up with no new excuses why he can't form a coalition government. So basically, for almost 2 months now, Macron has lost the elections, and his party is still running the country. So it does, you kind of get the sense that Macron has gone full agent chaos.
Completely, Dimitri, but in fact, a full Jupiter. In the beginning of his first mandate, he said, I'm going to be a Jupiterian leader. So this is, he has the mentality of a Jupiterian dictator, in fact. This is, he would love to rule by decree. And in fact, this is what he's doing for the moment, and he's very happy with it. Why? I don't need a prime minister, especially because it's going to be a prime minister from opposing parties, and he hates the what he considers the extreme left. It's not. This combination of parties in the left is a mix of the old left of the 60s and 70s, a few progressives, and a lot of woke. It's a salad, you know. And the people that the person that they appointed as a possible prime minister, she's a technocrat, in fact. She doesn't belong to any of these parties, but she's a very good technocrat, in economics especially, and still being refused. So, and the fact that his popularity in France, I would say his unpopularity in France is now total. It's over 90% of the population. People can't stand him. The problem is, how can we throw him out? It's impossible, right? So it's very, very complicated. And he's still, because he lives in a total bubble, it's himself, the Élysée Palace Circle, the Matignon, which houses the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So these are the people who run the whole thing. You know, it's 200 people, not more than that. You know, these 200 people are running France, essentially, you know. And, of course, outside the bureaucratic strata, directly responds to these 200 people, including the bureaucratic strata, which came up with these originally 11, it was 11 charges against Durov.
12,
and 6 were approved in the end. They released a communique yesterday. Basically, he's being accused of complicity with everything under the sun, in fact. There's no hard facts at all.
So assuming that the CEO of Toyota is watching this, I have a very kind recommendation for them. Do not go to France, because there's a pretty decent chance that some French bureaucrat will go on the internet and he or she will notice, oh my goodness, there are photos of ISIS militants driving around on Toyota pickup vehicles. I'm sure that Toyota is somehow legally viable for the spread of terrorism across the world. You know, not the CIA or Mossad or any of the other good friends of ISIS. But I mean, it does seem that they're operating on a very flimsy and ridiculous legal principle.
And these accusations against Telegram, they would apply to Meta or X or to YouTube, to Google, to everybody. You know, you cannot accuse the CEO or the owners of a social network or platform for abuses committed by users. And, in fact, this accusation that Telegram does not regulate users in Europe is false. For instance, there are a lot of chats and channels, if you are in Europe and you are on Telegram, that are not available for Europeans. And you have a message. This channel does not comply with EU regulations, blah, 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 blah. So, for instance, Telegram, they censored, they were forced to censor RT in Europe.
Yeah.
Because this is a EU law, you know. So, I would say, if this goes to, it will go to court, we know. With a crack team of lawyers, they can eviscerate these 6 allegations in court, but easily, very, very easily. There are no legal grounds for any of them. But it's a means of pressure. It's a means of harassment. This is something that all of us, content producers, analysts, as well as all of you, the audience who follow Telegram, we should be aware in the next few days and weeks the degree that these French bureaucrats will be trying to interfere with Telegram content in Europe, not outside of Europe, inside Europe.
Throughout this conversation so far, we've talked about the European Union's motivations, the motivations of French bureaucrats, and those of Macron himself. I haven't heard anything about the potential role of the United States. And the reason I asked that is because I was watching an instant reaction to Pavel Durov's arrest by former Trump State Department official Mike Benz, who happened to actually work on the informational politics portfolio in the State Department under Trump. And he said that he would be highly surprised if the U.S. embassy in Paris were not in any way in contact with French law enforcement beforehand about a potential arrest of Pavel Durov. Do you think that Macron was acting alone, that France is going rogue? Or is it likely that the United States also had some role in this?
But there's no question about that, Dimitri, because this is not only about France and about the European Commission. It's about NATO and the U.S. It's the collective West as a whole. There is also the added element of young, Russian, extremely successful all over the world. There's an element of envy as well. There's a personal, psychological element of envy as well. Let's go after him. And especially because the platform is extremely popular all over the global South. This is part of the war of the collective West against the global majority. So Pavel Durov was caught in the middle of an enormous geopolitical, technological, and geoeconomic game. And obviously, this was analyzed a while ago as, okay, maybe this is the weak link. Let's go after this guy. This is, I see this as the number one scenario. So maybe they got the wrong guy, because the guy they should have gone after is Nikolai. Nikolai has the encryption key. Nikolai has the encryption keys. Nikolai has two PhDs in math. Nikolai is a math genius. And whatever he does in terms of updating, upgrading, twisting, tweaking the encryption keys, that's him. That's not Pavel. So now Pavel is a hostage of French bureaucracy. So let's see how they deal with him as a hostage, if they're going to try to force him to do something, or, okay, you stay here and then you go to trial. And if you don't answer what we want to know, you're going to get 10 years in jail.
This raises a broader question, because first the U.S. deep state went after TikTok. And in many ways, you know, this is an ongoing battle, but they've succeeded in significantly taming TikTok. Now they're going after Telegram. I guess that begs the question, are we seeing the end of independent social media, the end of the quote-unquote free and open internet?
No, not the end, but they are trying to circumscribe it as much as they can. Because Telegram can survive all over the world. They don't need the West. So they won't be able to shut down Telegram. There's a technical issue which is complicated. The routers for Telegram, they are Google, you know, they are Western. So they can shut down the transmission of Telegram around the world. But they can switch to a Chinese routing system, or a Russian routing system, or an Iranian routing system, you know. And this is a serious attempt to, like we said in the beginning, either control, take over, or eliminate Telegram. We are just in the beginning. This is a long, long story. We are just in the first week of a very long story. And I'm sure Nikolai has all the contingencies planned, considering his masterful math background, you know. And Pavel was lately, his, especially these three, 4 years, he was basically a marketing face for Telegram. Absolutely. Traveling around. From the point of view, I would say that the most dangerous element is the point of view of the European Commission. Because they are absolutely obsessed if they don't have a social network, they need to try to steal one at least, or if that's impossible, block them all or control them all. So the next step from the point of view of the EC is going to be Elon Musk's X. There's no question about that.
I mean, this brings me to something that our mutual friend Alexander Dugin wrote, you know, shortly after the news of the arrest broke. He said that Duru's arrest is final evidence that no one can remain neutral in a state of total war that we find ourselves right now. And this is especially true when it comes to people who, you know, control valuable information networks, because global warfare and global geopolitical competition is so focused on the information space right now, especially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Durov was one of those old school internet entrepreneurial types who believed that basically the internet had changed the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a quote unquote free and open internet where ideas, products could go beyond national borders, and that technology had reduced the role of the nation state.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like geopolitics and nation states are coming back with a vengeance right now, and that everyone who has their own platform will be forced to choose sides.
Absolutely, Dimitri, because social networks nowadays, they are geopolitics. This is something that nobody could even imagine a little while ago. The power of a social network to shape this, let's say, several degree hybrid war, getting into hot war of the collective West against the global majority, is enormous. And Telegram has a this sort of power because the most of the audience is high level compared to the other ones. You cannot compare the high level of Telegram users to Facebook, for instance. You know, that's why they are a threat. So they need to be at least contained. And in the case of a bunch of certified losers like the Europeans, and I said Europeans in Brussels at the European Commission, not Europe as a whole, they are absolutely terrified. They need to exercise some sort of control. So in this aspect is an alliance of interests of the deep state agenda, the agenda of the European Commission in Brussels, and the French bureaucracy.
You know, I understand your point about that the Europeans will have a technically difficult time taking over Telegram due to the way that the app is built and due mm-hmm. to the precautions they've taken.
Mm-hmm.
But I nevertheless think that this is a sobering moment for all of us in the multipolar world, for those of us in Moscow, in New Delhi, in Tehran, in Beirut, and other non-Western capitals around the world, because what Durov's arrest showed is that Western security services can snatch key tech entrepreneurs, one of the few that are not formally under the purview of Silicon Valley and the CIA.
Exactly.
And basically take them hostage.
Yes.
What sort of precautions should the multipolar world take going forward to ensure that we don't find ourselves totally at the mercy of Western security services and information systems?
For the moment, we can't. We are at their mercy in several ways, you know. If Telegram was Chinese, they would never have pulled that off. Never, never. But social networks in Chinese language, they are not global. They don't have a global appeal. TikTok is different. TikTok is short videos. That's very, very easy. But Telegram has a lot of very, very serious content. So you need to be able to read it. And you won't read it in Mandarin. It has to be in a language like English, which is a lingua franca all over the world, you know. So that's the difference. The Iranians, which have the technological mastery to come up with something like Telegram, is the same thing. It will be in Farsi. The beauty of Telegram is that, okay, it's a Russian idea, but in several languages, but circulates in English all over the world. That's what makes it a threat, because it uses the lingua franca.
So I guess, you know, what's the solution then for countries like Russia and Iran to develop their own English language social media brands? Or what's the solution? What are some possible options they do so they don't find themselves in a vulnerable position?
Can I be extremely auspicious in a very Eastern sense? You know,
we're an Eastern auspicious show. Go ahead.
Exactly. Like a Buddhist, Taoist auspicious hope, in fact. Imagine if the BRICS come up with a social network.
I wrote about that on social media.
You did? You did? Wonderful. Wonderful. This would be absolutely outstanding. Of course, the internal debate among the BRICS would be a nightmare. But assume that they sit on the same table and all of them agree, and the BRICS outreach, you know, the partners, the ones who are going to be BRICS 15, 20, 25, etc. And everybody agrees, let's create our own network for all of us in the global south. This would be a way out. And if you pull the resources of at least the three top ones, Russia, China, and Iran, this could be done.
India and the United Arab Emirates.
But wow, you can do this, you know, and next year we could have a platform.
And, you know, what's keeping us from making that powerful dream a reality? Because, again, if all of these countries join forces, then they could, for a very real challenge, all of Silicon Valley.
Exactly.
And break the hegemony that's existed since the dawn of the information age.
Well, let's see if this idea gets some legs before the summit in Kazan in October, right? Well, from my part, I'll try to start spreading this idea around. Let's see.
So if I may, Pepe, I do have one ironclad suggestion for how our audience members can stick it to the EU, to Macron, to the US deep state, to French bureaucrats, and most importantly, help spread awareness and truth. And that is by liking this video, by reposting it, by subscribing to New Rules Geopolitics on X. We hold conversations that the Western legacy media will not. So thank you all for tuning in, for listening to our conversation, and we hope to see you next time.